Don't tell it.
No,
I'll tell it. I'll tell it.
I'm not going to say it. Shut up for a second.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Campcast. I am Jason Fallgraber. Thank you so much for joining us today on the pod. We have the not so long awaited, but the much demanded part two with Ted Roth and Barry Schwartz. We get into all the stuff that got cut off from the last recording, follow up on a few things from the first recording. Barry and Teddy spend most of the first part finishing up their 96-16A story, but what it has to do with Doris and Jeannie, which was, it was really special and a really cool moment and a seminal moment in their camp careers. Then we get into quick hits. So the questions that we ask everyone that comes on the podcast, like ride or die canteens, favorite cabin in camp, favorite bathroom in camp. And as you would expect, all of it goes completely off the rails in the most fun way possible. There's so much we didn't even get to. Teddy talks about a few Dunleavy stories that he has that we didn't get to. We also, there's stories from the 90s that we allude to that Teddy pretty much says, if you want to hear those stories, come to Fantasy Camp. Barry says, if you want to hear those stories, come to Fantasy Camp. So there you go. Come to Fantasy Camp, sit down with these guys, and get all the details of the stories that we don't get to on the podcast. Yeah, I hope you enjoy it. This is part two. We're going to have a lot more podcasts coming for you. Happy holidays, everyone. Happy New Year. And we'll be back very shortly. Here's part two with Teddy and Barry. But first, as always, Miles Provost.
All right. I'm keeping this up here so I can see the red. Because if I would have noticed last time.
Oh.
Because it turns to green.
Do you have a second memory card? Do two
good.
Memory cards?
We're good.
I mean, like, as in last time, would you have been able to pop it out, pop it in, we could have kept going?
I had my computer, and we would have been able to, I could have uploaded that stuff, saved it, wiped it,
yeah,
gone back.
Got it.
You know how I did a Beastie Boys rendition during my mic check last week?
No.
I did.
We talked for 3.5 hours. I don't remember.
Mic check.
Sorry.
Going off that, you know who does an back in the day, who did an incredible Beastie Boys impression? It was Ari Rosen and Corey Provis.
That's great.
Together.
Just like Mike D, MCA, Ad Rock. Just
that's great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's great. Corey Provis, Ari Rosen.
Ari Rosen and Corey Provis, Beastie Boys.
I love how Barry has the pecs to just rest the mic, and it's perfectly propped up to his mouth.
I
don't have the pecs for that.
They're holding the mic up.
The aesthetics of what's happening here. Teddy is not dressed like he was last time, but the energy's still there. He doesn't have his full like softball uniform. But Barry has his pecs holding the mic. He's created a hands-free environment.
I took off my sports bra for the event. I'm so excited for part two.
All right, so we're
part two.
We're going.
We're live.
Yeah,
again.
We're
Do
recording.
You wanna pick this up right where we left off?
This is exhausting.
So,
Barry,
for us, I would like you guys have had a. It's been a few days.
It's been a roller coaster.
Not
a roller coaster.
Has the fanfare?
It's been amazing.
Do you feel famous?
I think we got a 94% Rotten Tomatoes score for the critics, but the audience scores through the roof.
Well, the best movies are the ones where the critic score is super low and the audience score.
Right.
Like, there's a 50% gap in critics versus true. Audience. Like, that's the sweet spot.
Yeah, the audience score is higher.
Yeah.
It's been... We've gotten a lot of response.
We've gotten some incredible feedback
it's
from alumni.
Great.
Has anyone reached out and been like, you got that wrong?
No.
Or like that,
no.
That version of
no,
this?
No, absolutely. Actually, I will say, thing I will say is, but he's known for this, and God love him, dude. But Matt Schwartz called me, and he's like, hey, but, you know, I mean, who doesn't love Matt Schwartz? But he called me, he's like, hey, you got the coaching thing wrong. You were actually on first base, and Peter Luck was on third. It was the fifth inning. I'm like, all right, Schwab, take it easy on me, buddy. Like, but it was a really funny conversation. He was trying to correct me, but I was like, you weren't even, I don't think you were even there yet, Matt. Okay. But, you know, it was really funny. But no, incredible feedback.
I got an omission as well. God love him. And he called me out, and rightfully so. So we can get into this a little bit, but there's like, remember we were talking about parallels of coaching and what you are taught, you're going to go ahead and sure. teach, which I think is like a podcast theme.
Yeah, I would think.
So, Zach Dan, one of my favorites, probably my favorite camper.
He's amazing.
For reasons I really can't discuss, actually. He was my enforcer in the cabin without me being a counselor, so to speak. So, but he was on this 13-18 that we coached, that we referenced, and he's like, I can't believe you didn't bring up the pickoff play. And I was like, you're right, I didn't bring up the pickoff play. And so we could transition right into this. So in the 96 softball game.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Am I skipping ahead?
Well, no, we can. Yeah, let's get it. Last time we left off, we got cut off, the memory card cut out, right? When you guys were talking about the 96 softball game and how it related to Doris and Jeannie, and how like that was like one of Barry, that you were saying that's one of Barry's best like memories. You guys were all tying it together, and I think that's a really important story. So I want to start there.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Like start there whenever.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we were talking about Barry's like, oh, really, Teddy? We were talking about, I brought up a tidbit.
Dude, I'm sitting here in your recliner with my feet up again.
Giving me an eye roll.
Eye rolling, so, Jason, because he's refusing to use the footrest again.
That's the eye roll. Got
the
it.
Reclining option. So, it's all right.
I had mentioned.
Some of us are here for business and some of us are here for other reasons.
I'm just here. There's ulterior motives.
So I had brought up that Glenn, this is fun. So Glenn had brought ringers to camp, I think specifically for competition, which is just so competitive. So
I thought we were going with the 16-8 game.
We are. This is part of it. So at one point he brought up.
Let him.
Is it?
Yeah.
Remember the whole intro?
Who was
the
ringer in that game though?
Charlie DePoint was supposed to be the ringer for that game.
And that dude, Charlie DePoint, was like much younger
I don't know how old he was, but he was our 16-8 third baseman on that team.
Either way, great name. Great
Charlie
dude.
Charlie DePoint, who we didn't even know.
Haven't talked to, heard from, seen him.
We knew him for 3 days,
decades,
Barry.
Bro.
We knew him for 3 days.
Yeah, for all we know, like I actually looked him up like. I actually looked him up in the NHL at one point because he was like him and his brother Mike.
He was a big hockey player.
Big hockey players
so
in
Glenn
Wisconsin.
Got Charlie DePoint to camp. He was from Wisconsin. I have no idea where.
Great dude.
Okay.
I spoke five words.
I'm looking
him,
something up
maybe.
That's relevant to this conversation.
Great. So
I've already tried. There's a DePoint company and that always comes up.
So he was, but he had to leave camp 2 days before the 16A game. So we had practiced with him.
Gotcha.
As the third baseman.
Does the name Martin LaPointe, or as Jeff would say, Martin LaPointe,
no.
mean anything
no.
to you?
DuPoint.
No, I'm
not
saying.
Martin LaPointe was an NHLer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So my full circle moment of Charlie DuPoint reminded me that Martin LaPointe, aww, sent his kid to camp for a year.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
He came to camp 1 year and.
Hailing from.
Burr Ridge, Illinois, but also like he lived in Burr Ridge when he was playing for the Hawks.
Right.
Now he works for the Canadians, and his kid came to camp one
year.
Get
out of here.
He was a ridiculous hockey player, and all the kids at camp called him MVP because he was so good at hockey.
So,
we only saw him 1 year, never came back again. I think he had a good year, but it was cool to have an NHL
player.
That's
so great. Absolutely. Another professional athlete.
I love that you know that.
Well, that was but Marty LaPointe, that was like when I was.
If anyone knows that, yeah.
Well, but it was like kind of when I was a kid, so I was following I knew everybody on the Blackhawks.
Right.
I was a hockey player.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Charlie DuPont was our third baseman going into that game, and apparently he had to leave. I don't know why.
Because he had hockey camp, dude. He was like...
Right. So, but I
think... He was like being recruited.
But he was a ringer. 100% was a ringer that Glenn brought in, and that's not the first time it happened. There was a time when Mark Seider was not even at camp and just magically showed up and was on my basketball team when I was like 13 years old on the road at the other camp. And somehow, and I would love to get the authentic story from Glenn, but somehow Mike Dunleavy gets recruited to camp. And
oh, you're wondering how he got there?
What?
Last time on the podcast, you said you had a good Mike Dunleavy story.
I got a couple.
Okay.
He was in my cabin both years.
All right, you want to do? We'll do that later.
We can get to that
when we do quick hits.
Yeah. Okay. No, actually, Mike, I looked it up.
No, dude, no, Mike.
Sorry,
only
Barry,
one year were you
it's
with
Teddy's
us?
Teddy's cabin.
Mike.
It's
yeah.
His cabin.
Well,
not
but you were only with us one year. I looked it up because the year you had Kaliza, which I'm jealous of to this day.
Yeah, for sure.
Dunleavy was with us, and it was Craig Zipper. And by the way, oh God, big omission. Bad on me. Brian Beck was in the 91 senior cabin, and I looked it up, and I forgot. Because I was wondering about who Craig Zipper's co was when
Brian
we had
Beck.
Him. Brian Beck. Sorry, got a shout out. Old man Beck.
Old man Beck.
Love old man
that's
Beck.
Right.
He was great. He was awesome. Couldn't pick up a ground ball, apparently. That's just how he got his name. But anyhow.
It was a Glenn Klein nickname because apparently before Teddy and I were
like
even there.
He bent down like an old
he
man.
Could, right. He
yeah,
never,
he ground ball like went through his legs so he didn't bend down and yeah. Glenn
man,
nicknamed
that
would have
been
him
tough to
old man Beck.
Be a camp and have a nickname stick that you really don't like.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But no,
everyone had a nickname when Glenn owned camp, right?
Everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He was
and
the
they
Chris
were very,
Berman. He was Chris Berman.
I'm just
he
saying.
He had a Chris Berman campfire.
Very clever
time.
Nicknames.
We used to do that.
Yeah,
when
that's
I was
Glenn's
a
doing.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
To Glenn's point,
Steve
Brian
Kanotsky,
Beck,
like
Glenn's
that
old points. Man Beck, like he literally looked 20 years older than he actually was. I mean, he was.
Oof, we're taking yeah. shots, apparently.
But, no, he was a good athlete, though.
When I think of Steve Burr, of Chris Berman, it's just there was a camper named Mike Ivanovich, and it was just Mike Ivanovich, my balls.
Oh,
and
boy.
As, and as a.
That's
and,
not getting edited?
And, it. I, maybe, I don't know.
I'm well, you're just, the owner.
I'm just saying, as like a 10-year-old, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard in my
life. Yes.
I think there are only a couple of those campfires. Anyhow, so.
Swearing on this thing.
Bad way to get a nickname.
Yeah.
Not swearing on this thing has been very difficult.
That
because
is true.
If you have
you guys
a.
You didn't do a
it's
good
a horrible
job of
rule,
it the first
Jason.
Time.
It's a horrible. Yeah,
what do you
but
mean?
I had to.
Yeah,
but,
you're right.
No.
What do you mean?
Yeah, you're right. No, you're right.
I know.
Like not, 3 minutes in, there was a there was an F-bomb.
Yeah, I had but, to listen to three hours of footage and like diligently,
right.
So I didn't miss.
When you have an incredibly small vocabulary like Teddy, and what? You cannot. And you cannot
right.
swear
so,
to emphasize what you're trying
so
to
anyway,
say. It's
yeah.
very difficult.
Yeah, wait, you know, 100%,
we don't have a max time
100%,
slot.
100%, Bear. 100%.
I will not say. All right, first
okay.
of all.
You guys have both said it already.
No, I can't.
100%? You said it
no,
2 minutes ago.
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
first
you did.
Of all,
I can't wait for you to listen.
I apologize
okay.
to all the listeners. I wanted to punch myself in the face listening to our last podcast. The amount of times that I said 100%, the Glenn Klein Online School of Broadcasting at the University of Wisconsin would have failed me out for the amount of times that I said 100%.
Okay. Anyways.
I would have failed
right.
out.
Anyways, so...
This is why the people are here, though. Like, this. Get,
this
is
this,
why.
Okay.
Great, great radio voice, Glenn Klein. Incredible radio voice.
Anyway, so.
Yeah, no one's arguing with
no,
you.
No, 100%. Not allowed anymore. Not allowed anymore.
Bring it back. So, he brought Mark Seider.
Yeah.
He recruited Dunleavy. We can get to it. I would love to hear the recruitment story. He brought Charlie DuPont. So, Charlie DuPont was our third baseman on that team and had to leave 2 days before the game.
Right.
So Ricky Kirsch.
Okay, so real quick, let's do like the. All right, it's 1996. Barry won.
Recap.
Like Barry, we're doing a quick
yeah,
recap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Barry caught the ball in his chest.
From Harley
at home.
From Howie.
From Harley Rosenthal.
Harley right. Rosenthal.
My guy Howie.
To end the game.
Game. It's
yep.
now 14-13. Going into 16A. Right.
Good scene setting right there.
Right. So now. The table is set.
So the table's set. So we're playing a bunch of kids are playing out of position.
Sure.
Okay. So
Charlie
DePoint leaves 2 days before the competition.
Here's what I don't understand. Did no one know he was leaving?
I don't know. I don't think we knew, because why would we be practicing?
Right. Why would he be there?
I don't know. I don't know why he was even on the team if he was going to leave before the game. It doesn't make any sense to me.
It makes no sense.
Anyway, that could be a Greg Abrams question. Who is our coach? And shout out Greg Abrams. Reach out to me on LinkedIn. Connections are being made as a result of this podcast, guys. It's wonderful.
I love that. Dude, there's nothing better.
I love that you reach out to you on LinkedIn. I would just share your information. Greg, email me. I could have put you in touch real fast.
Yeah. No.
That's a social media network that I participate in. Anyways,
why Ricky Kirsch wasn't at third base in the first place?
Because he's an outfielder.
Right.
Because he was playing left field. And yeah, but he was a good left fielder.
Great ball player. Like,
okay, so.
Because Ricky Kirsch could win you a game playing third base or lose you a game playing. Like,
yeah, sure.
Probably a strategic coach's decision.
Okay, yeah, so here's the best part about it.
I won't criticize.
Ricky Kirsch had never played third base a day in his life. But he moved to third base because we needed a third baseman.
I always thought he was shortstop in that game.
No, he played third base, and Andy Schimmel was our shortstop.
Okay.
And I had never played a day in left field before that game. Never. Yeah.
Life-changing moment for
me. Life for me. Was
and then
big
that
time.
Was your spot.
That was until I left camp. That was my spot. And then Johnny played center field. He was playing right field, and I was playing center field. He moved to left. And it was this domino effect.
Do we know who got brought up?
Jake Goldner.
Okay.
Jake Goldner played right field.
So he was supposed to play for you. Like, because something had to, like, everyone had to move.
So Jake Goldner was moved up to 16A from 16B.
Okay.
And then that's how, that was the position
and then
change.
Larry Miller was catcher, right?
Yeah. So I'm going to get into that with the coaching parallel thing. So Larry was the catcher. Al Usby, who came with Dunleavy because they went to the same school together.
Right.
He was their first baseman. He had some big mitts. He was a good dude. But shout out Al Usby.
Alex Usby. I never called him Al, dude. I think it's Alex.
Is Alex, but I called him Al.
When?
How's his buddy? I called him Al. What do you want?
Okay.
Sure.
He's a Alex,
good,
sure.
He's a good guy.
You know what? Let's spend more time on this.
Usby.
And Matt Rossi played second base, and he led off for us. And Chico Weiss is our short center. And Andy Schimmel was our captain playing shortstop. So, and then we did the huddle thing. We're Shiner, blah, blah, blah. So at one point, it was like the third or fourth inning, and Matt Abrams devised this pickoff play. And we had practiced this a few different times.
Greg Abrams.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. You did not.
Yeah, I did.
You did not.
Well, Matt was probably playing against you.
He's older.
Yeah.
His punk brother was.
Greg Abrams.
So Greg,
I apologize for Teddy Roth for confusing you with Matt Abrams.
So Greg Abrams,
you're not even going to apologize.
Had devised this pickoff,
okay?
Where it was this quick pitch, and the first time they got a runner on base, on first base. That is, it was a quick pitch out with a right hander on base, and are at the plate. Quick pitch it to Larry Miller, who was like jacked without lifting weights. I mean, the guy was cut. Who then chucked it to Al Usby, and we picked this kid off.
Which, what got cut off from last time, I think, that we said, is that every generation now that has had a big, like, 16A game, there is a pickoff. There's, like, a key pick. It's become a Menominee staple.
I love that.
We've gotten really good at it.
Well, I love that,
like,
because...
There was a game against Ojibwe where they had, like, they were talking to each other, and they had, like, a code word that when one said it, it would be the
totally
like second base. Like,
Love that. I love how smart we are. So
to an extent, but yeah.
As far as playing the game in a heady way. Yeah, we are. So
I had one with Smitty. It was awesome.
It was, but
catcher to first base.
Never forget. 13A with Zach Dan. He called me out. He was like, "Tech, you didn't mention the 13A pickoff." And I was like, right, because it was the same thing on that same 13A play. It wasn't even my play. It was Greg Abrams' play.
That just got passed down.
It was passed down, yeah. And the pitcher, whoever the pitcher was, arguing, we think it may have been Drew Israel. We're not sure who the pitcher was in that game. But
Joe Klein?
I don't think he was the B pitcher.
Okay.
But pitch out, Zach Dan chucked it to Brent Young, who picked somebody off. Anyway, So that's the coaching parallel bit of it.
Sure.
That I passed down, but it wasn't even my play. It was Greg's play. So, but that was the first runner that they had gotten on. And I had looked it up today. They had scoring runners in scoring position in the eighth and ninth innings, but they only had two hits that day. They only had two hits. And Jordan Grant was our pitcher in place of David Davidson, the aforementioned David Davidson, who had broken his finger
right, like you earlier. Gave, you gave Jordan Grant some guff.
On the non-recorded part.
On the part that got cut off.
Well,
but like, they only had two hits.
Well, there's a reason why. So
Jordan Pippen Grant.
Jordan Pippen Grant, who's an awesome dude.
I think the way you described it was piss missiles.
They were hitting piss missiles all over the place. They were. They were. And he would probably admit that. He wasn't the best pitcher. He was the 16B pitcher. He would have been. But David Davidson broke his finger. He wasn't
when
playing.
When did David Davidson break his finger?
Earlier in the summer. Like, before we got there, he had okay. a broken finger.
So it was broken the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but Jordan Grant was throwing, the kid was throwing meat. God love him, but he was throwing meat. But we made, so Ricky Kirsch, who had never played third base a day in his life, was making diving plays. He made a couple of one-handed plays out down the foul line and was jumping around like a maniac, intimidating
Ricky
them.
Ricky
was awesome that day.
And for those who don't know, my cousin,
oh, yeah.
Ricky.
He is the hearth, just like Barry's the hearth.
Dude, honestly, one of the fastest guys I've ever played sports with. Ricky was incredibly fast. Very fast.
Like with his legs? Like he was.
Well, he wasn't running with his hands.
Well, like.
But.
Like in a dash? Or just, like he's.
Yeah,
quick?
No, just like Teddy said, like, I mean, to the foul line.
Whatever. He was a 25 pointer in message type like, of an athlete.
Okay.
He
okay.
would have been at like short center, like foul line to foul line, cover he, it. Right. No problem.
But that was my Weiss's domain. So, but there
really
were multiple
fast.
Diving plays that were. Andy Schimmel made a couple great, like, diving.
Sure.
There were diving plays. Cutting off the rocket shots they were hitting all day. I made a few sliding catches. Johnny Schatz made a few sliding catches in center field.
Was there just like resetting the energy of what was at stake there? Was there a discussion in the huddle before the game about like, this is it?
Yeah.
This is worth two. Like, we know we're up one, but this is like, it's been decided that this game is going to decide.
So there was no question when that game started. And I'm saying this isn't not like as an outsider, but as someone who was not playing, I can verify 100%.
Get into your bit.
No, I'm serious. Like, there was no question that this game was deciding the entire competition.
Tell the Doris and Genie bit.
Both camps knew that.
Right. So why don't you take
Tell the Doris and Genie bit? Because your version of that is so great.
Get Doris and Genie there, and then we'll go back to Teddy for like what was going on in the game. And
see,
then,
the problem like, is that Doris and it was the suspense of the game. All game long, back and forth.
Right, but we
three
got
three in,
so,
three out. You know,
but why was it significant that they were there? Like,
sure. So Glenn,
wait. By the way, it was their 30th summer that year.
Was it?
Yeah, because I looked it up. It was their 30th summer because I looked up the 5-year clock.
So,
it was
like
their 30th
chefs,
summer.
Doris and Jeannie, 30 years.
Right. It was Doris's 30th
that
summer.
That never happens. Like that is such an amazing outlier that anyone can be at camp for that long, let alone work in the kitchen
as the chef
for that long.
Yeah.
And not to make this about me by any means, but I think I appreciate this so much.
Why can't it not be about you too?
More,
you were there.
Well, because whatever. I'm no
you were living
and dying
with it too. It's about you too.
So, but I think the reason why it was so much more special to me, and maybe I noticed it just so vividly, like, and it just remained in my head, is because, you know, I mean, Doris, like, and Jeannie, Doris especially, knew my dad, right?
Right.
Like, Doris,
like they had cooked for generations.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, like, when, on the rare occasions my dad would come visit, it was like a hug and a kiss, hello. When my mom would come visit.
That's great.
A hug and kiss, hello. Not every meal, but a lot of times I go in the back of the mess hall and give Doris a hug and a kiss. Hello. Like it was,
as
hey,
a
Barry.
Camper?
Yeah.
You would just go
just
back
a big
there
hug.
And give the chef a hug.
Absolutely.
That's how just, we came to like, know that. Hey, I'm Barry, realizing now that's how we came to know them because Barry knew them. And
but so it was very a very special relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, sidetracking a little bit. I mean, there was one summer when I was a counselor. It was so flipping hot in that mess hall. One of those summers, it was just brutal. I mean, Doris and Jeannie were getting very old. I took like 6 fans out of cabins and put them.
Of course you did.
I put them in the kitchen facing. Ooh. I plugged them in like facing Doris and Jeannie, and Kanevsky came up to me and he goes, "Hey, Pumbaa, it's really nice to see what you did, but if you blow a fuse in my kitchen in the middle of a meal, I'm going to absolutely kill you."
That's great.
Yeah. So anyways, it was just really a really special relationship. Back to the 16A game. I can't speak for Glenn, and I don't know what happened behind the scenes, but somehow, some way, which had never happened before, and this is why it was so special, Doris and Jeannie arrived at Cahuaga at this game.
Right.
They had never really watched
much of the competition.
No, never.
And it definitely never been to Cahuaga for it.
Picture these two ladies who had been working at this camp for, like, Jeez, you said.
The other camp, please.
Oh, my
generation fault. And after generation working for these boys who they loved so much. And they had never seen the emotion out of any of these boys from competition, from winning a game, from the excitement of anything. Because they've just always working their asses off in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So I don't know if Glenn physically brought them, but he absolutely arranged it. Somehow, some way, they arrived at Cahuaga. And
Barry!
There's a little, the other camp, for God's sake, let it
it's
go.
It's blasphemy!
So they arrived, and for this game, not for the whole day at all, but for this game, someone knew, had an idea that this was going down, and this game was going to decide the entire thing. And both camps, the entire camp of everybody was at this game. And Doris and Jeannie were sitting on the bench on the 16A Diamond equivalent of the other camp. Up on the hill, there's a little tiny little hill off of the third baseline. It goes up, and there's a bench.
Yeah.
Doris and Jeannie were sitting on that bench watching, maybe not the entire game, but maybe they arrived like midway through.
Okay.
But they were definitely there.
Okay.
And you want me to get to like the part when we won and I turn around?
No,
or
like now
where do we go?
So that was the only game.
That they had ever watched.
It was
the first game that they had ever watched. And Barry, when it got cut off last time, was saying, everybody was down on their knees, holding hands, basically praying.
Let's build up to that. So you're on the field, like,
yeah, up to the last outs. I mean, I'll tell you what we were doing, but
so the game is It's normally a seventh inning game. It is scoreless through 7 innings.
So were there any key moments that you remember during that where it's like, that could have swung it, or that could have, like,
yeah.
How did it get to 0-0 after 7?
So
someone had to threaten him with a runner on base, and like,
that's the thing. So they didn't have a base runner until extra innings. They had one base runner. We picked them off. Jordan Grant, as I say, he gets credit for throwing a 2-hitter.
Right.
Now, they may have had an error or two in there, because I looked it up today, and apparently they had runners in scoring position.
You looked up the Megaphone article?
I did look up the Megaphone article today. They had runners in scoring position.
Who wrote the Megaphone article?
Greg Abrams.
Nice.
So they had runners in scoring position in the 8th and 9th innings, but I know they never got a runner past second base. That I know, because I remember keeping track of what was going on, and we couldn't believe it. We couldn't believe that we were not hitting. We were popping up the whole game. And
dude, it was
the whole game we were
brutal.
Popping up. Nobody could hit the ball
brutal
on
to
our
watch.
Side. And on their side, they are hitting rockets.
Which, by the way, like, what's the first lesson that we all as softball
on the
coaches,
ground.
Right? You hit the ball. Like, that's
right,
literally,
right?
I know.
Like, the most basic of Menominee softball.
So the best, that's how the game was won, though. The best part. Okay, so here.
So you hit the ball on the ground, you got to make three things happen,
yeah,
right?
Right.
So
Teddy, you got to put in perspective real quick somehow. For people who were not there, how much of a nail biting experience this was, this game, to watch this game. I mean, Nobody was getting on base. No one was scoring.
It was wild.
The defense.
It had to be so like, frustrating.
It was so tense.
Dude, the defense of our 16A team was insane. I mean,
it was pretty wild.
Like, you got it somehow described.
So, shout out Matt Weiss again. He made a couple of plays that I remember to his right that were nuts. So, okay, Ricky got into a... Here's what really went down, schematically, if you will. Ricky got into such a groove that he was playing like 15 feet off the plate. So that allowed
Schimmel...
Like
he
Schimmel,
was doing Menominee thing.
Yeah,
he kept going
big
closer
time.
And closer.
He was so confident. Right. And they were not challenging
him
anymore.
Jacked up,
they were not
sure.
challenging him anymore because he was making plays that were crazy. So that allowed Schimmel to shade towards the middle.
Right.
And he made a couple of great diving plays as well, which allowed Chico Weiss to kind of flank them in the middle. Right. And I was down the line and
because
Johnny's straight away. Menominee,
the short center is an infielder.
Right. So, but we didn't,
cause we know how to play soft.
Right. But Chico was kind of playing a bit in the outfield and taking away singles. And I was playing aggressively in left field and I made some diving plays and Johnny made a big play. And it just kept on happening and snowballing, but nobody could hit the damn ball. So finally.
Okay, so get to like the last
the
like
inning.
Top inning,
so
bottom, or whatever.
To 10.
It goes to 10.
It goes to 10 innings.
Is it dark? Is it not?
It's not dark yet. It's not dark yet.
No,
it's getting
there. It was
right,
afternoon.
You only played like 20 well,
right,
events.
Really, right.
You
so,
probably started
it was
the game
late
at
afternoon.
One.
So, yeah. Right. So I do remember vividly this one dude from the other camp who was trying to go down the right field line because they had the swamp out there, and if you hit it out there on a fly, it was a home run.
Oh, see, we played a ground rule double.
If you hit it on a... Oh, maybe that was it, because they couldn't scratch across sure. the hit. So the reason why the ball in the mess hall looks like a scrub ball...
Because it went in there?
...is because this guy hit... He took every brand new clincher and discarded it because he was hitting foul balls. We couldn't find it in their dump.
Right, because if it goes in there, it's like in the
it's
swamp.
It's dead,
yeah.
Right. So anyway, it gets to 10. And it's the top of the 10th. And
it's
Chico Weiss.
And it's 1-1.
0-0.
0-0.
Still 0-0.
Okay, yeah,
right. It was 1-1 in your game. So Chico Weiss, we're like huddling. Because we're like, and Chico Weiss is like, F this, I'm ending it. And in the first pitch, somehow, it was our lightest hitter. And he rips one down the left field line. And he has a double. Standing double. And we're freaking out in his Pirates hat. He
right.
still had that
and
Pirates
with no
hat.
Odds, all you got to do is move him over.
Right.
And
so
get
Ross,
him in.
So Matt Ross.
His Pittsburgh hat.
Isn't it funny how you remember, like Ricky Kirsch wore a Chiefs hat that day, yeah. red and yellow
oh
Chiefs
God.
Hat.
Everyone's got yeah. a hat. You remember the hats. It's
you remember
a weird,
the hats?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
So Matt Rothstein singles. I don't remember where the ball was, but I remember being up runners in the corners. And I'm like, this is my moment.
Oh, man.
I popped up.
Oh,
and I was like so upset. So there's one out.
All you had to do, you
was
could
my
put
moment.
It on the ground anywhere.
I know. And I popped up and I was awful. And I was like, look at Annie Schimmel in the eye. And I'm like, you got to pick me up. He's like, I got it. So Annie Schimmel is this jacked kid. He must have been. I probably saw him as 6'3".
He was
probably
a beast.
Wasn't.
He was a beast.
But he takes this ball. The first pitch, he's screaming when he's swinging the bat. And he chops down on this thing. He shouldn't have called out 100%. He chops down on this thing at such an angle. It bounces over the pitcher. Chico slides in. Because
Greg was probably telling him, whatever you
yeah,
do,
just get it
just
on the damn
get
ground.
Get it on the ground because he's basically stealing
100%.
Home. Yeah.
So Chico slides in. And I see him like do this like corkscrew afterwards. And I'm like, we're hugging him. I'm like, thank God. Schimmel saved me. And then we go to the bottom of the 10th. And there's two outs, and there's this little pop fly, and
okay,
Ross
so
team.
Here, like, okay,
yeah, all right, great,
okay,
this
go
is awesome.
Ahead,
yeah, yeah, perfect. So this is it.
So we go up one,
right?
We go up, it's
10.
1-0, and that's it.
Right, we're up one run, and there's two outs. We have one out to make, and this game, this entire competition, is ours. The entire thing, okay? And this is when the story comes in. It's me and all the 16B guys that previously won our game.
Miraculously,
yeah,
by the way. It was great.
Yeah, it's Howie and me, and I think, you know, and my brother, Peter Ehrlich. We're on the third baseline. Even some of the 16A guys that, I don't know, weren't
Wait,
in at the time.
They let us be on the third
well,
baseline?
And David Davidson.
On the third baseline.
Because oh, we get, yeah, okay.
Not all the spectators, but a lot of us were lined up on the third baseline. We're on one knee. locking arms and holding hands.
Okay,
I kid you not.
Where was Doris?
Doris and Jeannie were on the bench behind us, okay. Up on the little berm, yeah. Along the third baseline, the little berm.
It's so great.
And sorry, Teddy. Oh, my God.
You didn't get it out.
So the other camp.
Okay.
Fozzie.
Sorry, I have some questions later.
Well, hold on.
Gotcha. Okay, keep going.
Bookmark that.
So the other team hits a pop fly. Correct me if I'm wrong, Teddy, because from what I remember vividly, Ricky Kirsch at third base catches the ball.
You're wrong.
I'm wrong. Who is it?
Pretty sure it was the second base, Matt Rothstein.
Okay.
From what I remember.
All right. Either way, it was on the left side.
It was on the right side?
No, it was on the left side.
Okay, whatever.
I remember on the left side because the only reason why I remember is because Ricky Kirsch was not like a guy.
Wait, so between the two of you, you're not sure.
I think it was on the left side.
Who made the last time?
I'm 100% positive, but.
All right, well. That may be. I won't argue that, but.
I just remember wanting to catch that last ball for sure. And it was definitely not.
One thing I do remember after seeing that pop up. Is because maybe this is why I think it was on the left side because the ball was caught. It was a short pop in somewhere in the infield, and I look over immediately, and Ricky Kirsch, for those that know Rick, he's not like an incredibly emotional guy, you know,
he's emotive.
No, he's not like an incredibly like emotional like soft dude.
Okay.
Like he's an awesome guy.
He's a man's man to that degree.
He's like an awesome guy.
Yeah.
Like he'll hang with the best of them with anything. But the one thing I remember is that as soon as that ball was caught, Ricky Kirsch rips his Chiefs hat off his head, over his face, goes down to his knees. And starts to hysterically cry as the entire camp. Glenn brought in the entire camp. The entire camp stormed the bump.
Yeah,
and we were everyone was crying. We were hugging.
We were all in tears. It was great.
And Glenn was in there with us, partying, and everyone's going crazy.
It was great.
And Glenn, I'll never forget. It had nothing to do with me, but it just so happened that I was right there. He said, "Hey." Look behind you. And he was pointing at Doris and Jeannie.
Oh, that's great.
Doris and Jeannie were sitting on the bench, hysterically crying.
That's so great.
It's incredible.
Hysterically crying. Great. And that's dude, so great. I can bawl right now. But Doris,
do it.
You know, being the Doris, like just, you know, they were like in their like their gear, their kitchen gear, everything except right. like an apron.
They had their aprons on. You know, crying out loud.
That's hilarious. They came straight from lunch service or whatever. Doris and Jeannie
were wiping their eyes with Kleenex. They were hysterically crying. It was the first time.
Where'd they get the Kleenex?
That they had ever. Oh, you know,
it wasn't from them.
They're old ladies. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it was the first time they ever saw their boys like this emotional over
winning. It was the first time they saw us competing, period.
I mean, dude, it was probably
the only event they saw because they don't need to see anything else after that.
What did they make you for dinner that night? Do you remember?
Ribeyes.
I couldn't even
just
tell
like
you.
Ticker.
Stop.
No, I'm kidding.
It was by far one of the most incredible moments.
Probably grilled cheese. Imagine?
Not only with camp, Teddy. Not only with camp, one of the most incredible moments, but one of the most incredible moments of my life was just being a part of that game.
It was exhilarating.
It was just insane.
Ted, you said something a second ago. You said you wanted to catch that ball so bad.
Oh, yeah.
And I think there's a difference between the guys on the field who want that and the guys on the field who are like, this is a one-run game.
Totally.
Please, for the love of God, don't
hit it somewhere
let this
else.
Ball come to me.
So this is the thing.
That's a great
point. I will say this.
Like who would be this
guy? I speak for the whole team. Everybody that day, we were on fire defensively. I mean, we were so confident because we kept making play after play.
Yeah.
So I will give Ricky Kirsch some credit.
Like sometimes you just
started it.
Yeah.
And then Andy Schimmel made another play right after him, And it was like, then it was just on. And we just kept making these diving plays.
I would agree with that. The way this team was, and then the way that they were playing, especially defensively, there was not a single guy on that field that wasn't like, give me that goddamn ball.
Yeah, that's
ball.
Fair.
It was like, wild.
Let's end this thing.
We all know that if you drop one ball during a game, like there's those moments in your head where you're like, don't. Like, let this go to our best guy. Like, just hit it to the short.
And that's the best part about this team is that we were so locked in. And there was, we were just so confident. And it kept building because there was diving play after diving play. And it was like a matter of time before finally someone was going to get a hit. And that Chico drew a line in the sand and was like, we're ending this now. Like, that's the one thing
I
remember.
So much.
And the best part. So here's the best part. So this comes all the way back around. So in 2022.
Sure.
2022. There's a massive alumni thread on some app that I can't name. But every time that we compete with the other camp.
Yeah.
We get updates from whoever's on staff. And it's the best thing ever. And Chico and I somehow are texting each other through this app. And he's like, you remember that game? I was like, yeah. And it's just like, he says to me, this is so full circle. Because the last time I was at camp, I was on that team for the competition. And my son's first year at camp, he's a part of watching the 16A win it all for the competition.
That'll get insane.
I shed a tear. I had goosebumps on that. Like, that was unbelievable. That parallel was made generationally.
Yeah.
Incredible. You can't write that.
Okay. So can I share the camp owner's perspective?
Yeah.
From that game? Because, and I'm sure it might be different for Glenn and for Steve, but 2022.
You mean like logistics with saying, hey, this is for all the marbles?
No, not that, because we knew was tied. Like, it wasn't, we had an odd number of events.
Yeah.
Like, the numbers, the numbers were the numbers.
Right.
It was, so we hadn't competed since 2019, right? We didn't have camp in 2020.
Oh, right.
We
didn't do the competition in 21. So it's been 3 years. We're back doing the competition, and it all comes down to this thing
with a relevant relevant number of events.
And it was the third day because of rain, so it was dragged out as long as it possibly could.
So dramatic
to this moment, and so now we played four basketball games. Like, all of Quagga came over.
Yeah.
We finished the basketball games, and then we moved to softball.
We played
these games. Sorry, but we're at Menominee, and. As a camp owner who had been doing it for 7 years already, wanting this competition to like feeling it's a really important thing and wanting it to keep going and all this stuff, and like, we want this relationship with the other camp to be like all of that. It was this moment of, there's a lot of young people on staff who have never been in a moment like this.
Oh, sure. There's like 2 years of worth of people.
For the first X amount of innings, all I could think about was which one of these morons is going to say the stupid thing?
Right.
Because it was live streamed and all the, this is where the technology comes into play, where everyone was watching.
Right.
They were watching. People at home were watching. And our guys.
People at home were watching.
Unbelievable. Can you imagine?
The probability that someone from one of the camps was going to do something dumb or was going to just be the guy in the moment who ruins this incredible thing. It was impossible for me to sit there as a fan and watch that game. I was pacing. Everywhere. I was I was talking to the admin, like, okay, you've got this group. You've got this group. Here's what we're going to do if we win. Here's what we're going to do if we lose. Here's how, we're rushing versus not. Like, there's all these things that were I was an anomaly for what that moment was for me and for the directors, but for everyone else, it was one of the most incredible.
I really
moments.
Wish for
That's
your
a
sake,
great perspective,
that you
dude.
Would have come to camp as a 9-year-old instead of a 10-year-old.
Right.
So you could have experienced that.
Because I did not beat Quagga as a camper ever.
Oh.
97, so 98, 99, nothing in 2000, 2001, 2002, 2003. We lost.
And 2000, 2001, you know, they knew they were going to get steamrolled.
Yeah. We've talked this. We've talked about this a lot. It's on the record. Yeah, it's on the record.
Yeah, I always truly felt for Konevsky.
There were a lot of tears. I always felt
for Konevsky. We didn't have. There was not much success going on.
Wait, while we're on
individual games, yes, but as a whole,
and those kids, man, those kids.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject of Quagga, can I ask you guys something?
Yes.
Because this is not something that appeared too many times when I was at camp.
Okay.
Did Joe Quagga come up for you guys? Okay.
Who?
All right. Here we go. Ready?
Same response.
There's a thing.
Who the hell are you talking about?
All right. So I sometimes, in my spare time, because I'm a freak, I'll read old megaphones. I'll go back to the 60s and 70s and 80s.
Joe
and I'll
Quagga.
Read them.
Jason.
And, yeah.
This is not. It's not that unexpected. Sure. The owner of Menominee would go back to read megaphone annuals.
Did you put Quagga on trial at all? When you guys were kids to get you
on trial.
Okay. I'll explain it to you. So,
you mean to get like pumped up for the, Glenn did some incredible things.
I know I'll lead up to it and then we can decide what we want to do with this conversation.
Like Teddy, MOS, dude, seriously.
Wait, MSO.
MSO. Oh my
God. We might not talk about
MSO.
I don't think we can talk about it.
Menominee shall overcome.
We might not talk about that right now, but
I don't think we can talk about it.
So it turns out.
Glenn was amazing.
It turns out that in the 70s and in the 80s, and then like once in 2008 when I was a counselor, there was a thing where leading up to the Quagga competition, there's someone at camp would play a character named Joe Quagga, and Joe Quagga would get it. And I know I keep saying the name, but it's important.
It's driving
for this,
me crazy.
But what? It has to be said for the purpose of the story.
What, right? So, like beat the piss out of him or something?
No,
or
so Joe Quagga would get arrested. Would get arrested at camp for
what?
Something different. I swear.
Hell yeah.
I swear.
I like it.
We'd get arrested for something different every year.
Yeah.
And then he would be put on trial.
Yeah, chain him up, throw him in the lake for
this
sure.
Is so true. He would be put on trial in front of the entire camp. They would litigate the, like whatever it was, like Joe Quagga tried to poison our water or like do whatever.
Yeah.
He'd be found guilty and then he'd be sentenced. And like, I swear, like Joe Quagga died of electrocution in the 70s. I'm gonna send you guys the articles. But like,
when was this? In the 60s and 70s
and 80s.
It like, sounds really
he would
lengthy.
Be put on trial.
That's really like, you know.
That did not happen when we were there.
Steve asked us to do this in 2008. And so what we did was Joe, he was like, okay, we have to put Joe Quagga on trial. You guys have to come up with a reason that he's on trial. So the reason was that he turned our water blue. So we went into the mess hall and put blue dye in the water at one of the meals. And then,
but that's an awesome pump
and
up.
And then we arrested Steve.
Who was the equivalent back then?
We
though?
Arrested Steve for treason, and Josh Green was the the defense attorney.
Oh, so
someone else was the prosecutor.
Oh,
Bogatz and I with Ethan.
Josh Green signed up to defend that bastard.
With Ethan Ritz, we're standing on the porch of 19. And
so
he
you guys
was,
like redid this from we, like
yeah,
the 1960s.
And he was Judge Ritz, and Bogatz and I were flanking him, and like they did a trial where they had witnesses. It was a whole thing. And then we found Steve was innocent and Quagga was guilty. And,
of course.
And like, we didn't know what we were doing, but it supposedly it was a thing years and years
ago.
Anyway,
so before our time.
It sounds pretty lengthy to me.
Yes.
But I mean, we got some stories, man. What Glenn did, I mean, we've talked about this in the first part, but.
Well, we didn't talk about MSO.
Dude, Glenn again. Glenn was an incredible leader as far as making you believe in yourself.
Oh, yeah, you could conquer
and
the world.
If Glenn said you can run, like I said in the first one, you give the kid a confidence to believe in themselves, blah, 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 blah.
This is going to get edited if you tell it.
Well, okay,
no.
So you could say what MSO was, and then we won't get into like.
Well, why would it get edited?
Are you
one
nuts?
There's one story.
MSO?
There's one story
Barry,
that well, we're not going to tell.
No, we'll keep it clean. I don't know what
keep
you're referring
it clean.
To.
You can't keep it clean with what happened.
With MSO?
Was MSO multiple years or just one?
No, it was 1992.
Year.
Barry, you can't tell the story.
I don't know exactly
no,
what
you
you're talking about.
You could tell. What do you mean? You all
I'm saying
what I'm talking
is, that,
about?
Is that when Glenn said, when Glenn said,
we'll find an
oh, I know. With the,
yeah. What's the.
Oh my God.
You can't tell that.
Okay. No, you can't.
No, you cannot tell that story.
I don't know what you're talking about. Whatever. My point is,
here, Barry, can
when Glenn said, you are going to win this game, like, you won the game. It was incredible.
I have never really heard this story. Like, I would like.
I'm going to tell this.
Yes.
Okay.
I completely forgot.
So I will tell.
Unfiltered and tell this.
I'm going to verify. Okay. So here, I talked to Jason about this offline before we did the part one. Cause I was like, I really want to tell this story.
Yeah.
And he's like,
and with MSO.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was like, well, no, I'll tell you this. But he was like,
with what?
Here's what we're going to do.
I get it. Yeah. Go ahead.
Break your news.
Break my news.
Yeah. What are you doing this summer, Bear?
Can I just say real quick, though?
Oh, you're pivoting. You're not even going to tell me the story.
No. Real quick, though.
I'm not going to waste time.
Fair.
Got a heart out.
No, to your point, though. Don't tell it. No, I'm not.
I'll tell it.
I'm not going to say it. Shut up for a second. To your point, the story is so significant. It's so dramatic.
It's so out there.
You didn't have to say a thing. And all it took was like just 1 second for you to react the way you did to jog my memory.
Oh,
well, to make it.
It took a lot more seconds than that.
It's true.
No, maybe 3 seconds. But I was like, oh my God, that thing.
And it's traumatic. You know,
yeah. And I signaled to Teddy and.
Okay.
Tell the math. You want to tell the masses, Bear? Put it on the record. I want you to put it on the record because, quite frankly, I'm afraid that June 1st, I'm going to get a text and be like, sorry, Ticker.
No, dude. No, absolutely not.
One thing that got cut out of last podcast. Oh, I gave you a compliment last podcast that got cut out.
Oh, you did?
Like a really nice compliment.
Oh, my God. Do tell.
So I'm going to give it to you again.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about how.
No, please. Because, you know, you're always just like, you know, making me. I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
You think I'm busting balls all the time with you?
You got to try sarcasm that we both appreciate, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think you appreciate it.
Totally.
I think not so often.
Barry's got the waterworks going a little bit.
No, I don't. I don't like Jason at all whatsoever. Go ahead.
Last podcast, we were talking about how important like small moments are between like people you look up to, right? Like when I was a green and white captain, after the relay was done, it was your last year at camp and you were one of the eldest guys there. And you were like one of the guys I looked up to and you came up to me who was 15 and you're like, hey, like great job. Like, great job, Captain. And he, like, it was a moment. And it, like, really meant a lot.
Absolutely.
To me. And, like, those moments between, like, I don't think sometimes returning counselors know how important those moments are until we're doing this. Until, like,
you think so?
Way after. I think sometimes they do. But I think, like, a small interaction that you might have with a senior cabin member, a CIT, or like a 14-year-old can mean like a lot to that person that you don't realize in the moment.
Yeah, dude. I think a lot of it has to do with...
You said something nice to me.
Well, I think...
And I'm acknowledging.
And that was the only time. I think a lot of it has to do is like when, you know, when you get older and you like you meet up with a guy or whatever, you're having drinks with a guy and it was just like 15, 20 years ago. And maybe they realize how much it impacted them at the time, and now they're telling you, or vice versa. It's really special. It's really cool.
It's really cool. We tell the staff, like, we call them disruptive moments. Like, you recognize that moment in time where, like, you could say one small thing and could have a really big impact.
Okay. Right.
I'm done saying nice things to you.
You're afraid of it.
Yeah.
You're afraid of it.
It's not my dojo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
Leave it to me. Beaver. It's okay. It's okay to get emotional. It's okay to
I get emotional.
Feel awesome about things.
Do you?
Yeah. No. At camp, I do.
At camp?
I do. I actually do.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. Like the last night, I struggle getting through my like stuff.
Sure.
And like I'm giving out awards, especially Nate and the Values Awards, like I choke up and I like,
there we go. See, you were pressing, you were digging on us. No. Now he wants something from you. Here we go.
So
no one's questioning any loyalty or nothing, by the way.
So I write up all my stuff and like, I don't script everything I say because I want to speak from the heart.
We're gonna die. That's not
right, Teddy,
not that was
jerk.
Brought back. Not yeah. that was brought back. I'm never living that down.
Since I've never written a thing down again in my life, I'm afraid Teddy's gonna haunt me.
I will pat myself on the back and just say that, like, one of my I'm a good speaker. Like,
yeah,
I can
off
step
the
in
cuff
front of,
is good.
I could step in front of a crowd and yeah. I could,
sure,
I could talk. But
absolutely,
I don't, when I'm giving awards to people and when I'm thanking people, I don't want to miss things, so I write certain things down. And going into giving out the Values Award to Nate a few years ago, I like it was 2021, I'm pretty sure. And Jeff Davidson will have to check me on this because his son is involved. It was 2021.
Davidson's coming around again. Love
Jeff
it.
Davidson?
Yeah,
I love that dude.
It was the first year back COVID. And we were going into Wausau to give out Nate and the awards, and I was gonna like talk at the end of the summer, and we didn't have a summer before that, and like I was feeling things, and I knew,
yeah,
like I didn't, I was like turning to people and be like, I don't know if I could get through what I'm about to say,
yeah,
and so, and I hope this doesn't embarrass him, but like I told this in front of the entire camp, so I walk up to the front of Wausau and I have all these things written down, and I'm about to speak, and Jack Davidson is sitting in cabin four's bench in like front left.
How old's Jack?
He first year camp, so he's like third grader. He's 10.
Cool.
And maybe 9. And he rips a fart. Like, it's a silent room. He does it. No one knows who did it, but him and I make eye contact. And it just, it brings me to a new place where like all of like the, like all like the like deep, deep seated emotion, like I can move it away and be like, this is what camp is.
And then I just roll and talk about everyone and I get through it.
And at the end of it, I'm like, you guys, I just want to thank Jack Davidson.
You said that.
it was a perfect moment.
Way to anyway, go, Jack.
Part of his life.
Yeah. It was so clean. And so
a clean fart.
Yeah, the noise was perfect, and his eyes were like, "Oh, I don't know if anyone noticed." it was so great. All right, let's do quick hits because these got cut out last.
We're already run over.
All right, ride or die canteen. What's your canteen of choice?
Do you want to do the Dunleavy stuff?
Well,
we have time.
Well, let's do this, and then we'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's my favorite canteen?
Whatchamacallit.
Yeah.
Like,
sure,
what I would get when I go to canteen.
I'm sorry, is this a hard question for you?
Yeah, it is. You know why?
Do you mean to clarify?
You know
it?
Why?
Yeah, because you don't eat candy?
No, it's because... Dude,
how is this complicated?
I didn't have canteen.
What is this? I
was a fat little shit. I didn't go up to canteen
and
get
like
candy.
That? You had canteen.
Exactly.
You had canteen? What do you mean?
I went up to canteen. Dude, I didn't go eat canteen. I got like juice.
Drink a pop.
No, I got 50 cents.
6 years?
Okay, yep. So 50 cents?
Okay.
So that's your go-to canteen
So
answer.
Give me 50 cents. I got a fruit
punch.
So what
you buy with the 50 cents?
I got a fruit punch.
Probably took the 50 cents to town and got the stink bombs.
Right. Because no one told you that fruit punch is probably worse than the trust.
Exactly. Yes. The amount of sugar in that damn Minute Maid fruit punch drink.
All right.
No, dude, seriously, I didn't go get candy. I didn't get
Barry, fine.
This segment is called Quick Hits. It's supposed to be rapid
fire.
Right,
but Barry,
rapid fire. No,
screw that up.
I didn't want to wait in line to get a candy bar.
Oh my god.
I just
get
went
over
I got
yourself.
50 cents. I went to the vending machine.
Great.
I got a juice.
You know it's a dollar now.
Is it really?
Wow.
Inflation.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Inflation's insane.
All right,
Teddy.
Favorite,
you know what? I want to hear Teddy's stupid candy.
Whatchamacallit.
How hard is that?
That's such a strawberry or vanilla or chocolate.
Whatchamacallit?
What are you talking about?
Oh, no. I'm thinking of Charleston Chew. Sorry. My bad. The fat kid got the candy wrong.
Barry somehow failed canteen. How does that work?
And now we have the tagline. We have the
I was totally thinking of Charleston Chew.
All right.
Right?
Favorite physical cabin in camp. What's your favorite cabin in camp?
Oh,
13.
Yeah, 13.
Hashtag fantasy
best
camp.
Bathroom
what's up?
In camp.
Best bathroom. I could. Go ahead, Teddy.
No, you are having the floor on this.
Basement of the lodge.
It's because there are all the mags, the sweat mags down
no,
there.
No, it's because no one touched it and it was mine.
basement lodge. A lot of people touched it.
No, it was because when we were at the top of WAS and people forced us
it
to go.
It was very touched.
To go, you know, number two in other places, I found the basement of the lodge. That was like my place to go.
You found it.
I don't know.
Like,
I did.
Like you're Lewis and Clark. And
it looked pretty clean to me.
I will say.
Dude, I'm a germaphobe. If just
camp,
like, you
if
know.
Camp was never full.
Yeah.
Cabin 11.
Yeah.
Because Cabin 11 was the last. I was always the last they cabin that's full.
Yeah.
Lock I'll tell you up. What the last bathroom would be. And that's in Kaz's house.
Ugh, that is disgusting.
That thing has never been touched
oh,
by
that's the worst.
By that is my gross. Ass. Ever.
This is a question you're asking ever. Everyone, the favorite bathroom in camp?
Look at the conversation that it sparked.
Yes.
That is true.
Dude, it's a great question.
I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
And I even added my least favorite, which is Kaz's house.
I can't believe of all people.
I won't
people,
even walk through that
no.
bathroom.
I can't believe that Barry failed canteen.
No. And no, even with Kaz's house, when on the rare occasion I even took a leak down there, I stood like 8 feet from the toilet.
There or the lake?
Because there'd be piss. Like 7 feet from
also,
the toilet.
I ask
so
these questions
gross.
Because everyone experiences these things.
Yeah, for
everyone
sure.
Has different
it's great.
Stories, but we bring it back around.
Yep. Basement of the Lodge
Let's
is
keep
mine.
Going with, I'm fine right. with me. I love it.
Most regrettable competition jersey name.
oh, man.
So this is not exactly intimidating. So this is when I figured out we could set trends. So Harley and I, in 1997, we went down to the lodge.
Rapid fire, Teddy. This is a story.
We went down to the lodge, and we cut the sleeves off of our Menominee shirts.
Okay.
And we wore the sleeves on our heads, like the logo, the sailboat logo,
sure.
on our heads as a place of a headband.
Great idea.
It was.
It was great idea.
Because in the 1997, that's why your jerseys are sleeveless.
Because you did it.
Yeah.
Oh, so that's regrettable?
And the regrettable part is that I had sniffles on my jersey. Not exactly intimidating.
Actually, I can't believe I thought of this. I think my first year, I wrote SOP. And my dad and Steve Ehrlich and Bobby Sachs actually came up with this for me and my brother and Pete Ehrlich. It meant son of purple.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
And purple.
Wow. Purple.
No, because to me, like, what the hell is this? Because purple was like what they named like their group of camp
yeah,
or whatever.
Was their crew.
Yeah, for sure. It was their crew. And it was like son of purple. So Peter, David, and I believe Peter as well, was SOP on the back of our jerseys. And the only reason why it's regrettable is because every I'm year good. After that, it was either like me for sure. It was Schwa, and then shortly after that, it was like, you know, Pumbaa, whatever.
Pumbaa, baby.
Be Schwa. So, yeah, SOP. It was cool just because of the dads.
It's hilarious.
Yeah,
it's
funny.
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
Who gave you guys your 5-year jackets?
Brett Coleman.
Ari Rosen.
Who did you get 5-year jackets to?
A lot.
Yeah, quite a few. One of them was
Brant Young. Was the what? You gave yours to Siggy that year.
Yeah. Brant Young, Siggy.
Brant Young.
Yep.
I don't remember all of them.
Bauer?
Okay. You're sitting
Andrew
around
Bauer.
Pre-camp.
What?
You're sitting around pre-camp.
Yeah.
You're yep. doing the name game on the first day.
Name, oh, my
My God. Name is Teddy, and I like...
Well, I have an obvious answer that Steve always... I always sat next to Steve. So Barry and I
no,
always
didn't.
Sat next
no,
to...
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. So
no.
Barry and I always sat next to Steve, like, on one side or the other. And Barry... I think one. So Steve always went to Barry first, and mm-hmm. I always have to do
well,
the yeah. last
What's
one.
The question?
I never
My
had an answer.
Barry and I like.
Oh, dude, I
Teddy
could,
and I like. You know, whatever. I never had yeah. a stock.
I will tell you
that.
This though. Really funny story is that. So obviously the thing is like, my name's Teddy and I like tennis, right? So I'm sitting next to Kaz.
You know, we get it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, we all got
that's
it.
Anybody listening understands what we're talking about.
We got it, right? So one of the counselors, I couldn't even tell you what year. I don't think he made it. But it was like, it was, I was sitting next to Kaz, and this counselor goes, yeah, you know, my name's Peter, and I like skiing or whatever. And I look over at Kaz And Kaz was not a man of like many words, you know, but Kaz looks at Konevsky and goes like, like making fun of the counselor, like, dude, you're not sounding out the words correctly. Like, my name's Peter and I like skiing or what, I, you know, he's like, Kaz was totally making fun of this kid.
You having
kid.
A good time over there?
This is a really core memory for you and I.
You having a good time?
I'm happy that we're here for it.
All right. Cut it out. Edit it out. No, I don't give a shit.
Oh, it's great. The masses, I'm sure.
Anyways, but the name
sure
game.
Sure loved that. Quick hits. What else you got?
Oh. It's
so,
great.
No, okay. The name game, though. I don't remember what I said, but yes, I always sit next to Konevsky.
It's funny that Barry and I both have obvious answers that would both get edited out.
I don't
of the
remember
podcast.
What I said. No, you can edit that Kaz story out because
that's just, fine.
No, you
out.
Didn't appreciate Teddy.
I remember
and
that
I don't
we sat
that.
On either side of Konevsky, and Steve would always look at me and go, "So Barry, what do you got?"
And then he'd go all
always.
The way
around.
No, and I said to Steve, and I, you know, Konevsky will tell you, I pretty much like threatened his life. I sat next to Steve. I said, "You're going to the left," and, right. and what that meant was that all I had to remember was one name.
Because right, yes, everyone after. Yeah, have to say the yeah, name of the person.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
And so if you're at the end, you just say everyone's
honestly,
name.
It's probably because Barry got in the water and put in the docks, and I got screwed every year
yeah,
on that.
For sure. And Steve honored it, and
I did.
Love him for that. And he went to the left, and all I had to do was remember one name, and then I got to relax the rest of the name game.
Okay, I have a heart out.
You have a heart on?
Yeah. Heart out.
Out.
I gotta go.
Oh, a heart out.
Are we already at the heart
Let's
out?
Do it. We're wow, there. It's 8:45.
Oh my Listen, gosh. Here's Part three?
Well, yeah, not next week, but I think, like, I listen to a lot of podcasts, and the favorite guests that they have, they bring them on, like, every year. Like, let's do this.
Let's go.
Let's keep going.
Let's go.
I wanna finish with.
I gotta say one thing, though. Please. But go ahead.
Well, no, you should say.
You can finish, but I got to say one thing.
Well, no, it's my podcast, so you say your
it's
thing.
It's your podcast.
And
it's
then
your
I'll
camp.
Finish.
Just snot it on
so
the mic.
You can edit out the Kazi story if you like to make room, but I got to say.
Well, making room doesn't, like, change the time.
He's making room for his schedule.
No yeah, school.
Like, it doesn't get me out of here sooner.
Buster's got to pee. Buster's got to pee.
Right!
No, he's at the dog sitter who is keeping him for a little longer tonight.
Oh, well,
I can do this.
I'll Venmo you. Yeah, we'll make up a
this
difference.
This has nothing to do with money.
You're paying overtime for the dog sitter. We'll take
it
care.
Might have. It might.
We got you.
Can we call the dog sitter?
I didn't know that.
Let's
I
call
thought
the dog
Buster
sitter.
Hey, was locked up and
can
had to
go
pee.
Can we call the dog sitter?
No, but
yeah, we'll
like
call
human
a dog
people
sitter.
That have
100
like
bucks
a,
for the hour.
Yeah, we got you covered. We'll take care of
the
difference. Right.
Come on.
That's not how about this? I'll Venmo the dog sitter. We'll take care of it. We got you covered.
Say your thing. Say your thing. I'm going to ask you one final question.
Here's the deal.
And then I'm going to go home.
I'm going to say my thing.
All right, fine.
So.
This is, you got to leave the people wanting more.
And I'm, dude, they, trust me, they want more of this guy. Teddy.
So humble. Don't point to me.
Yeah.
You're the humble one as we established on episode 1.
100% humble.
June 6th.
Yeah.
I had a, as you know, I had a pulmonary embolism while at work. Okay.
Man, I wish we had slightly.
It's okay.
This is a
so June 6th, I had a pulmonary embolism. Sudden, no health issues, just bam, almost died. Went through my heart, up my leg, through my heart, into my lung. Rushed to the hospital. Thank God. Obviously, here I am today. Short of it is. Here I am. While I was in the hospital with oxygen, drugs, they weren't sure if I was going to be okay yet. I was getting text messages from more people from the Menominee family when I was in the hospital and who were at fantasy camp because fantasy camp was going on at that time. My whole point is that I am going to fantasy camp 2024. And
this is a really nice story. And now Teddy,
I just want to be with you.
Teddy's trying to crawl into
so
the same lounge.
The whole point
is
that
on, and they're snuggling and it's adorable because they're best camp friends.
This thing of ours, this Menominee family, is incredibly special.
You're coming back to Fantasy Camp.
And it just a huge shout out to the alumni and all the CM fam. Just love you so much. And all those messages got me through, but it's just no matter like if you've been with a guy for like you've seen a guy in a month or you or I get unfortunately I have to see Teddy like several times a month or whatever.
Unfortunately.
Very unfortunately. Or you haven't seen a guy in a year or several years. It's like no matter when you run into someone from like the CM family, it's like no time is ever lost. You know what I mean? You pick up from where you left off. And it's just an incredible thing. And I just love y'all so very much.
We love you too,
and that's
Bear.
All.
Hey, wait, what's the
I
punchline?
Say?
You're coming back.
Punchline is that Jason's the boss and
no, that was I'm not even gonna
you're coming back.
He's going
we're
next.
We're finishing it there.
You're coming back to camp. Bear's
oh, yeah.
coming
so,
back to fantasy camp.
If you're going, I'll see you at fantasy camp 2024.
I also have something to say.
Love you all
real
so
quick,
much.
How could you say anything after that?
Yeah. Well, if you're a high school right. graduate and you're listening to this, you're actually listening to this, and you're not coming to fantasy camp, you're missing out.
All right. Damn it, Barry. For Teddy, for Barry, for the love of camp, I'm Jason Fogarty. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Jesus.